Welcome to the Open Paddock Podcast. This is a very special episode of the Open Paddock Podcast tonight. This is Mike. I am joined with Doug this evening. We're going to call this episode 36A, and tonight we're going to talk about the Kansas IndyCar race, which Doug had media credentials and spent the weekend behind his camera in his own little dream world. So, Doug, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing this evening?
Doing pretty good. Tired, my feet hurt. I think I'm still wet from this weekend.
Ooh, yes. How much of this weekend's activities were underwater?
Just about all of Friday. I got to the track. I couldn't get off work, unfortunately, on Friday. But I had a couple hours before, or you know, in the morning before work, that I could be there, dash off to work, put in some time. Try to affect some kind of education, convey some sort of understanding and knowledge, and cross my fingers, but then rush back to the track afterwards. So I get there at 7:30, and it's spitting rain. I'm like, ugh. But, I mean, such is the nature of it, right? So I figured, no worries, I'll go check in, get my vest, and then meander around the garage area, see if I can poke my head in a in a few garages, seeing people get ready. No, not so much. Everybody just kind of hunkered down. Most of the doors were closed. Those that were open, there was nothing going on. So I abandoned the garage. Figured, well, I'll make my way over to the IndyCar fan zone, where I was going to meet up with some of my IndyCar Downforce colleagues. And there was no one there, because, of course, it was raining, and there were no spectators there either, because, well, it was raining. So I'm like, all right, well, I'll go underneath the grandstands and try to take some pictures of the track, get some, you know, environment shots type of thing. And I did, and I got a nice picture of the wet track down below me, and it started to rain a little harder.
I do have a comment about that. You seem to be getting very good at taking pictures of wet tracks. Is this a trend?
I certainly hope not. At least not on the ovals. I tell you what, though. Wet road courses, it's of course less than comfortable being out in the rain. But I tell you what, that a wet track can make for some of the best road course pictures. That can really be some great stuff if you get the reflection set in just right. It can really turn out neat. It sucks to be in it, but when you're back home reducing the pictures, man, it can really result in some cool stuff. But of course, on an oval, not so much. So anyway, there I was under the grandstand, getting some shots of the rain and clouds. Starting to rain a little harder. Then the rain started to get a little harder yet, as in not liquid anymore, and we started to have some hail. First, I thought, well, a little pea-sized type stuff, maybe, little flakes of ice. Started looking at it, but no, these are... And not only was it just golf ball-sized hail, it had hair.
Normally, hailstone,
you know, it gets smoothed out. It's built up layer by layer as it goes up and down in the thunderhead, right? And gets bigger and bigger, but it's kind of ball shaped. These weren't ball shaped. These were jack shaped. It had a kind of a ball like nugget to it, and then these spiky protrusions coming nice. Out all over the place. Wow. That's some nasty stuff right there. So anyway, needless to say, the morning was shot.
Yeah.
And there was so much rain coming down so hard that the entire infield was just flooded.
Yeah, so much so that the practice sessions were delayed, and then qualifying was pushed back as well, wasn't it?
Well, it was. They rescheduled the whole Friday kind of structure. They were planning on having two practice sessions, one at 10, one at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and well, it just kept raining and raining and raining and raining. The rain did stop, I think, what, early afternoon, right? Maybe right around 1-ish. But at any rate, what they wanted to do is they wanted to dry the track and at least get some practice time, since there were so many people coming to Noble for the very first time. Simona DiSilvestro, Bertrand Baguette, Takuma Sato, and, well, Romancini, as you mentioned before, is not new to ovals, but he's new to ovals in the IndyCar.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, Alex Lloyd, this was his first mile-and-a-half oval. And, you know, no, I guess you really don't want to put John Andretti in that. He's run mile-and-a-half ovals ad nauseum, right? Three different series, just not in an IndyCar, but I think he could figure that out pretty quick. And he did, as it turned out. But at any rate, they wanted to get some of these inexperienced people, at least oval inexperienced people, some time on track and to shake down the cars and kind of shake down the drivers as well. Mm-hmm. But that turned out to be a blessing for me because I had to work until about 4:30, got out of my 4 to 4:30 meeting, hopped right in the car, bustled it to the track, which was nice. Track's about 15 minutes away from the college. And got there about 15 minutes ahead of time for qualifying. Excellent. So I get there, I park, put on the vest, get the cameras around my neck, trot up to pit lane to watch the qualifying, and it was pretty good. There were some surprises, to be sure. You know, not least of all was Tony Kanaan's performance. Lack thereof.
Yes, I hear he came away from the weekend with a bruised toe and some damage in his motorhome.
Yes, that was certainly self-inflicted, wasn't it? He came in, you know, what was interesting, and this was great from a photography standpoint, is that, of course, after they come in from their qualifying run, they come into this little cattle chute, for lack of a better word, they got a little section of pit lane where they're funneled down into and on the outside lane on pit road. And then there's all the media around there, but it's perfect location to get some photos. I got a lot more coming up, by the way, so keep checking the photo gallery.
Yeah, let's make a call out on that right now. If you'll head over to the openpaddock.net website, black tabs across the top, next to last one on the right is the photo gallery where Doug's work is displayed for all to see. And if you'll hit that, you'll see the Kansas photos at the top of the photo gallery. Take a look through those. There are some good ones. You'll get to see some of Doug's great rain work. And oh, man.
I'll make sure I get a shot of the hailstones in there, too.
Yeah, nice. I got to partake in some of that hail as well, but it was Saturday night.
Yeah, got it the day after.
Yes. So.
But at any rate, so excellent opportunity to get some real nice shots of the drivers. Because they'd come out of their cars and, you know, they'd take a drink of water, they'd talk to their engineers, and they'd saunter over, talk to the media people, and that sort of thing. Meanwhile, all best photographers are
mm-hmm.
You know, like little paparazzis trying to get the good headshot type of thing. Except for Tony Kanaan. He gets out of his car, rips off his helmet, and for lack of a better word, stomps. I don't know how else to describe it. It was a stomp back to his pit box where he had some what appeared to be a very heated discussion with, I believe it was his race engineer. But let's just say TK was not a happy man at that point.
I believe the conversations went something like this. How did Danica get ninth and I'm back here in 15th?
Well, he said that they were working on race setup all day. They didn't even bother trying to get a qualifying setup. And boy, it showed. He on time, he qualified 15th.
Yeah.
However, of course, Dan Weldon, Marco Andretti got called out for going below the white line during their run, sent back to the back of the pack, which moved Kanaan up a couple of spots to P15.
Yeah.
But, you know, the...
And that white line's a bit of a bugaboo, isn't it? It keeps coming up.
It does. I forget who I was talking to at the time. I know it was during one of the downforce events that weekend. So we were talking about that particular thing. And, you know, our consensus was, if it's pavement, it's inbounds.
Mm.
If it's green, well, you ought not run down there, but you can if you really have the guts to try it.
Mm. So, well.
Yeah, we came to the consensus we're not a big fan of the white line is out of bounds. If it's paved, you can use it. But I know there's some issues people bring up about safety or whatnot else. But
yeah.
Be it as it may, they got called out for going below the white line, which was out of bounds this race, and. Any rate, sent to the back of the pack, which was rather perplexing to me, because Milka did the same thing.
Oh.
On the front stretch. In fact, this was another great discussion point Friday night at supper. By the way, big group of us went to Tequila Harry's right there across from the Johnson County Community College. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, if you want some really good food, it's not the most authentic Mexican food, but it's really good food. Mm. So Open Paddock recommends Tequila Harry's.
Very nice.
At any rate, I'm going to charge him a free beer for that little plug. But at any rate, a big discussion was Milka had done something that very few people had ever figured out how to do.
And that being?
How you can turn right on a left-hand turn oval.
Ooh. See, now, Milka's the one that would be able to figure that one out. I imagine she had to turn right on that left-hand oval quite often during the race as well, so she could make way for the rest of the field.
Well, now, this was during her qualifying run. Her line was really atrocious coming off turn four, so much so she had to... she had to give right input to the steering wheel to get her back online midway through the tri-oval. It was perplexing.
You know, Doug, you and I have had opportunity to discuss this in the past, but we'll hash it out again. How in the world is this woman still driving an IndyCar? I'm not saying anything against her being a woman. I'm not saying anything against her being a Venezuelan. I am saying something against Citgo, the sponsor, who turns a blind eye to the fact that she cannot drive, and they're putting their money on the line so she can go out there and make a complete mockery of their sponsorship.
Well... You know, here's the thing.
Wait, before you go there. Okay, great. She has some intangible assets as far as she's good with fans and all that kind of stuff. But dang it, if she can't drive, why is she there?
I agree. But that's not a Citgo decision. That's a Brian Barnhart decision.
Well, hopefully Brian Barnhart will wield the ban hammer a bit more this year. And convince Citgo that it would be in their best interest to sponsor somebody who actually can compete in the races somewhat, not being the mockery that is held out of qualifying sessions because they're afraid she's going to hold up everybody.
Yeah, well, there's some issues regarding that we'll get to when we start talking about the race.
Okay, good enough.
I have a big rant about that.
Okay.
Maybe not a long rant, but a big one.
Any other thoughts on qualifying? It looks like Briscoe ended up winning the peak pole award. Scott Dixon and Dario Franchitti turned in, how would you say, almost identical lap times to finish second and third in qualifying. Now, Hideki Muto was fourth. He was fifth, but as you said, the white line came up and took away, I believe it was Dan Weldon's position. He was initially fourth and moved back.
That's correct. That's correct. And, yeah, how excellent for Newman Haas. Mm. Apparently, they didn't lose the setup data they had from last year when Graham Rahal set the pole.
Sweet. Yeah, definitely.
And
that behooves them well as they move into the rest of the ovals, because the majority of them are mile and a half D-shaped travesties. Oh, excuse me.
Well, and, you know, those that aren't, they have data, and now they can be fairly certain that their data on the oval is solid. Hideki Muto, Graham Rahal have a little bit different driving styles on the twisty tracks, but apparently the oval setup seems to be working pretty well, and Hideki had a really nice qualifying run and a really nice 98% of the race.
Yeah.
But it really was, in spite of the unfortunate result at the end, and we'll talk about as well, it was really a great outing for Newman Haas. And, you know, if we think about the races coming up, the oval races coming up, you have a bunch of mile and a half ovals, but of those that aren't, you have, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, who's done fantastic the last couple of years at Iowa? Hideki Muto.
Seriously.
So, yeah,
well, you know, and obviously outside of Iowa, you've got Motegi, which Hideki definitely wants to do well at. And I'm obviously grouping Motegi outside of the traditional mile and a half ovals simply because it is very different. And
yeah, you actually have to break. I mean,
you have to break and avoid the weepers.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah. Yeah, moving forward, another team that had no setup data would be the Fast Racing team with Alex Tagliani.
Oh, wow. Talk about leaving up to your game, huh?
I mean, seriously, you kind of expected to see Tagliani's team doing well on the on the road courses, because that's his specialty.
Well, now, mind you, he has 32 oval race starts.
True.
He's not new to ovals.
No,
even though he's from
not.
The Champ Car camp. He was around when Kart actually did the mix, and he ran a lot of ovals as well. So, you know, he's not as green to ovals as a lot of people initially might think.
No, but certainly he's not green, but his team,
yes.
Brand new team, brand new chassis that he's never really done much in on ovals. Now, granted, he has raced some ovals in it, but not that many.
Yeah. And you can't count Indy. Indy is a special beast.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Indy's probably more akin to some of the road courses on the schedule than it is to any of the ovals.
That's exactly how I've heard Indy described. It's the road course with four left turns.
Yep.
But at any rate, yeah, Alex Tagliani did a fantastic job. And can I just say again how much I love that copper color. It just looks so cool.
The one thing that saddens me is they haven't gotten dispensation from the league to put the copper rims on that car like they showed off in some of the press photos, because those were sweet.
Yes, that would be very, very nice. Yeah, do you know what the league's reasoning for that was?
I'm sure that it has to do with the tire sponsor and everything, you know, the rims and being Oz rims and everybody the same. I'm sure that that's part of it.
Well, I'm sure they could probably work some deal with Oz if they really fought it.
Yeah.
But at any rate, that's an inconsequential thing.
Anyway.
Moving right along, another great qualifier was Vitor Mira,
mm-hmm.
Putting in a very good effort.
You know, you just have to say wonderful things for the Foyt team, because Vitor brings experience in both oval course racing and obviously road and street course racing.
Mm-hmm.
And Foyt is having some good success with Vitor, and I am very happy that they didn't ditch him and move on to someone else after, you know, after his injury.
Yeah. No, I'm very happy to see Foyt stay loyal to Vitor, and it really seems to be playing out well. I think Vitor's return to Indianapolis Will certainly be one of the big stories of the month, and I would not be surprised to see them easily in the top 10. I would not be surprised to see them in the top 5, although I'm giving that 50-50.
Yeah.
Maybe even 40-60. In other words, I don't think it a slam dunk that they'll be in the top 5, but I'm not going to be stunned by it either.
Now, the one thing that's working against Vitor long term for the course of the season, and well, not so much Indy because he will have teammates, but for the season itself, without the valued input from teammates, it's very difficult for him to be able to be the one man show on setups and everything.
Yeah. And, well, it's not just having teammates to bounce ideas off of, but it's also having another car. You know, when you think about it, you got a two-car team versus one-car team. You have the same number of hours available in the practice time, but with two cars, you're getting twice as much data.
Yes, yes, indeed.
And then, you know, that can be really invaluable.
Then, you know, you go on to, say, an Andretti Autosport, where right now, for at least the next couple of races, Kanaan and Hunter Rey are just, you know, they're on the same page when it comes to setups because they like the cars to feel the same. And that's going to continue to pay big dividends, and hopefully will pay big dividends for the team at Indy with a Ryan Hunter Rey win.
Well, that would be pretty cool, and how excited would Izod be to have that happen, you know?
Yeah, seriously.
But the number that I heard was that Ryan Hunter Rey was 3.2 mil short
yes.
for the season. So after Indy, unless one of our listeners or some other IndyCar fan happens to win the lottery, actually, you know, the guy that won the Powerball lives just up the road from me, about 30 miles away. Maybe I ought to go hit him up, say, hey, can you spare 3.2 mil to give to the Ryan Hunter Rey? I'm sure they'll let you into the paddock and everything.
Oh,
but anyway, yeah. Outside of that, I really have some concerns about Hunter Rey's.
Yeah,
for the season.
I hate to say it, but if it were going to happen, I would have expected to hear something about it by now.
Yes, kind of like the Graham Rahal issue.
And you know, the 3.2 million number probably is the full amount that they need. But that said, they might still go for a 1.5 million and then make up the rest or something like that if they can help.
Especially if Ryan is in the championship hunt.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, he's not fading fast in that one. I mean, he is doing well, so.
One other qualifying note is Sarah Fisher had a nice solid run.
Yeah, definitely.
In 14th, now in past years, think 14th, well, hell, there's only 17 cars on the grid. But of course, this year we had 27.
That was a crowded racetrack, and it kind of lended itself to some of the comments that we heard after the race, because it seems like every blog under the sun is talking about NASCAR-style restarts.
Yes, and
I'm a bit exhausted with it. I'm a bit exhausted with this idea.
Well, what you'll notice is that it's the interwebs saying that, not the drivers.
Yes, yeah.
We'll talk about Kanaan and
let's get
Frank
into that later.
Discussions about that later. Yeah.
First thing, let's get into the day of the race dawns, and granted, this is kind of a new experiment for Kansas because up until this season, your ticket to Kansas was tied to every other ticket for every other race at Kansas. So if you wanted to see the NASCAR trucks for some reason, well, you had to buy an IndyCar and a Cup ticket, and vice versa, all the way around. All of their races were tied together, unless you found somebody on eBay that was selling tickets or what have you.
That's what I did.
Yay! But this year, you could buy a single race ticket. But actually, it was a race weekend ticket. For this,
well,
Kansas,
not really. You could buy a ticket to the IndyCar race. You could buy a ticket to the truck race.
Uh huh.
if you bought one or the other, that also got you in on Friday.
Okay. Okay. Well, the track released that they sold 40,000 tickets.
Yes, indeed.
They sold 40,000 tickets, but they also neglected to tell you that was 40,000 tickets combined for the 2 days.
Well, you know, the other thing is they are still doing the season passes. They can get rid of the season passes. They just have – you can get that, or you can also get individual race day tickets.
Okay.
So there's a lot of people that that want to be able to see the nationwide race and the cup race, and they want to keep their seats. They've had their seats for years, and so they keep with the season pass. There's some other perks you get with that as well. But at any rate, so, of course, those season pass tickets include the truck race and the IndyCar race. Those get lumped into the numbers, whether or not those tickets get used or not. I need to stitch together, and I'll try to get this done sometime tomorrow night, maybe. We'll see. But at any rate, I had a panoramic shot of the stands. And this was while I was on the pre-race grid. So it wasn't like it was a half an hour or an hour before the race or anything.
Mm-hmm.
This was a couple of minutes before the command. And it was desolate.
Yes.
The numbers that I've heard knocked around on the interwebs, about 15,000 people, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
It was really atrocious.
I've heard as high as maybe 22,000 from, you know, from experienced crowd watchers like Kurt Cavan, you know.
Okay.
But that said, it was poor. For I believe the stands there hold about 70,000, and it was...
Around 80.
Okay.
80, 82, I think, is the official number.
Well... You know, before we jump into really digging into the race, the one point I really wanted to make was, you had the first four events this season, which came off very well on television.
Mm-hmm.
Very well, big crowds, enthusiastic crowds. Probably the only event you could say wasn't a big crowd was Barber, but it was a big crowd for a road course.
Absolutely.
And you had probably three times as many people at Barber that you had at the race this weekend.
Yep.
Well, and they were all hiding back there in the trees.
I'll tell you what, under the giant spider. Yeah, I love the giant spider. I've got to get to Barber next year. But anyway, I tell you what the difference was. Those first four races were put on by people who were actually concerned and invested in the
yes.
event success. And so they promoted it, you know, likewise.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk on the internet the last few days about the ISC tracks.
Well, yeah.
And their continued existence on the IndyCar schedule.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of faith that they will be, at least some of them. Kansas, top amongst them. I think we saw the last open wheel race at Kansas, because you know I live in the Kansas City metro area, work in the Kansas City metro area, watch Kansas City metro area TV, listen to local radio on occasion when I'm not listening to you and Sean wax poetically about rally and IndyCar. But at any rate, did I ever hear an ad for the IndyCar race?
I'm guessing no.
No. Did I ever see one on the television?
I'm guessing no.
No. Did I ever see a billboard?
I'm guessing no.
No. You're right on all three counts, sir. Congratulations. You won a prize.
Yeah. We went last year to Kansas, and granted it was an extenuating circumstances because of the weather last year and everything. But, you know, if you've already bought the ticket, you're not going to affect the walk-up crowd all that much. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but anyway, there were extenuating circumstances last year. But, you know, I've been to Kentucky on a few occasions, and Kentucky is almost a carbon copy of Kansas as far as the track goes.
Yeah.
And there's far more enthusiasm around Kentucky, and there's far more promotion around Kentucky. And what's
the
difference? Well, it's owned by ISC, and before that, or excuse me, it's owned by SMI, and before that it was privately owned.
Yes. And, you know, that's the big difference. The Kansas race was not promoted at all, and the attendance really showed. It's unfortunate because it was really a fun race. Those who saw it on TV will disagree with me, and I watched the race coverage on Sunday afternoon, and it was some kind of bad. If you read my review post, my retrospective on Kansas, the big thing that I really called out ABC on was their complete miss, complete whiff of what happened to Ryan Briscoe, the race leader.
Yeah, I saw that as well, and I was very curious as to what actually happened when he came into the pit and he had three wheels.
Yeah, tried to get around a full mile around the track, a full mile.
And they didn't even show a shot of that?
They
tried to explain it a little bit. They didn't show a shot of them going around the track. They didn't even talk about it.
Jamie Little said he quote, thought something might be wrong with the car and brought it in for inspection.
Yes.
And it's like, there's something wrong with this car. Left front wheel fell off.
Well, you know, maybe they've got some guys that are used to doing radio on there.
That brings up something. Big plug and promotion for the IMS Radio production crew. If you've got Sirius, you can hear them on, I think it's channel 211, which is how my wife listened to it on her way back from Jefferson City. Or you can listen to them online with the race control. The video feed sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. There's some infrastructure issues with that relating to what we were talking before we recorded about the IT kind of flux that the company is in right now. But at any rate, the IMS production staff, the radio broadcast, was amazing from what I heard. My wife said it sounded like an incredibly exciting race, listening to their call of it. And you know, both of us watching the ABC coverage were like, is this the same race?
Yeah. Yeah. See, and the IMS radio, they do an excellent job, and Mike King is Mr. Intensity and Mr. Excitement. But that said, the one thing that the league really has to focus on, for those who are at the track, they need a FM repeater at the track so people can get it with standard FM radios, so that they don't have to rely on local broadcasts to do it. Because I've been to again, Kentucky. And Kentucky, that's one race where the radio broadcast was delayed by like 20 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And that was awful.
Yeah, that's an issue. You know, there are some races, some venues where that's not really a problem. In Kansas, it wasn't a problem.
And that wouldn't have been a huge issue, except the broadcast crew, the booth crew that they had at Kentucky that weekend, they were really bad. And then
for the PA?
Yeah, the PA crew, which you could also get through the FM radio. They had a repeater for that at the track. But just a few laps into the race, that went out.
Yeah.
So it was basically turn off the radio.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I of course, at Indianapolis, I have it on 1070.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've not had luck with the FM, the new WIBC.
Yeah.
But at any rate, at Mid-Ohio, they've got an FM repeater there. At Kansas and at Texas, they just air the IMS broadcast over the PA.
Very nice.
Yeah, they recognize these guys know what the heck they're doing. Why should we try and, you know, reinvent the wheel, so to speak?
Hey, I've got to throw in a plug here. One more dig against Eldora. You know, I've been doing this a lot lately, but one of the things that I have against Eldora for the last couple of seasons, they haven't been buying, they haven't been paying USAC for USAC's dedicated track announcer.
Oh!
And they've been trying to do it on their own when they only do maybe two USAC shows a year. Let me tell you something, guys. That's atrocious. Now, probably nobody who actually has been to Eldora listens to this podcast. And if you do, kudos to you. I appreciate your sympathy as we go through this. But, wow, how much of a difference is it when you have somebody who knows what they're talking about, excited about what they're talking about, compared to some local yokel who's just trying to remember that car number 14, Vitor Mira, is actually pronounced Mira instead of Mira. It gets old.
Yes, yeah, you know, I had a similar kind of story that I posted on Twitter. And by the way, if you want to follow me on Twitter, just look for Zorpius with a X, Xorphpheus. But at any rate, I posted a pic from my TV. Tony Kanaan and Vitor Mira, my era, or...
Yeah.
Ira. But at any rate, Vitor Mira and Tony Kanaan were on one of our local affiliates here on a morning show, and they had Tony Kanaan's name spelled out underneath him. And I was happy it was actually underneath TK instead
yes,
of
yes,
Vitor.
Yes.
But I had no idea Kanaan was spelled with a C.
Oh, Tony Kanaan.
Yeah, C-A-N-N-A-N.
Nice.
Like, oh, really, guys? Really?
Yeah.
You know, it takes, what, 10 seconds to do a quick back check on that, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Goes back to the lack of promotion.
That's true.
It really does. But, you know, before we get into the race, let me talk real quickly about the Downforce pre-race party.
Mm-hmm.
This quick plug for Indy Downforce, the official fan club of the league. People that run this are really fantastic. I think what is it, Mike? It's like 20 some odd bucks.
Yeah.
A year. But at any rate, you come out to the track. You get some credit for going to races, watching races, that sort of thing. You can redeem for swag later in the year. And that's all well and good. But before each race, they have a pre-race party.
Mm-hmm.
And they invite race drivers and IndyCar bigwigs and personnel and personalities to come and talk to the fans. It's generally just a good time, kind of meet up with some other people, other racing fans, and catch up and swap stories and all that kind of thing. And then get to, interact up close and personal with, some of your favorite drivers and stuff like that. Well, at Kansas, they had Terry Angstad come and speak to the collected group of racing nuts. The driver they had were Martin Plowman and James Hinchcliffe. Those two are a comedic pair. I tell you what, that was some funny stuff listening to those two banter on. It was really brilliant. But the serious stuff from Terry Angstad was fantastic. He is certainly aware of the rather cooling relationship with the ISC, mentioned that they're having some discussions with the ISC, and maybe not all the tracks come back next year.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Now, I was just going to mention, you know, Robin Miller was rumoring that on the Speed Report this weekend as well, that that all of the ISC tracks have the potential of not coming back next season, which I think is a little far-fetched. That's a whole bunch of tracks.
You know, I don't know about all of them.
I would think Watkins Glen.
That's an SMI track, isn't it?
No, Infineon is SMI. Watkins Glen is ISC.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But Watkins Glen is a good race. It's well attended. So is Chicago.
Yeah. But outside of that, then you've got Kansas and Homestead, and you couldn't bus people to the tracks and have better attendance there. I mean, it's just atrocious.
Yeah, and you know, Randy Bernard has already come out on record as saying that you know, cutting the bottom two races off the schedule each year is certainly an option. And well, you just named the two at the bottom, didn't you?
Yeah, I think those two are potential. And then if they do that, if they really do that, you have to wonder about ISC's desire to have that kind of egg on their face, and then they'll just drop all of them and say that they're just tired of the IndyCar series underperforming and blah, 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 blah. You know, put out their press release to spin it the way they want. But there is the potential of them not being back just because ISC is not interested in having them cut two races.
Right. Well, you know, at the same time, it's rather perplexing because at the same time they're talking about bringing the IndyCar series to Daytona. Mm. And angst, you know, when this first came out, I read it first on Jeff Antonucci's blog site. What is it?
My name's Earl. Yeah.
And at any rate, I read it on his site, and I can't remember the guy's name, the track president,
Greg,
mentioned that they would be very welcoming of the IndyCar series to come and race at Daytona, that their phone lines were always open. And it's like, well, it's, you know, kind of two-way street here, buddy.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I made mention that, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. But I was surprised that Terry Engstead mentioned that yes, they would love to go to Daytona, and that they were talking and that they were trying to arrange a date.
Hmm.
And of course, it wouldn't be on the oval.
Yeah, yeah.
Even after it gets paved and it's all smooth and nice, which I'm sorry, that thing should have been repaved 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You wait until you develop potholes before you resurface your track, really. Yeah. But
They're in Florida. They can get away with waiting a long time between repaving.
In the 70s,
when that thing was paved last?
Yes, yes, exactly. But any rate, so, you know, Ang said, talking about going and racing on the road course there. I'm like,
yeah. Here's you know, we talked about this on the podcast last week, but you and I can get into this now. Here's my thoughts on that. I just don't understand. Obviously, you cannot race on the oval.
No.
The IndyCars could probably do 300 on the oval. When a stock car unrestricted can get up to 250 on that thing, you know the IndyCars can do some crazy stuff. So, they're not racing on the oval. It'd be on the road course. And let's be just completely blunt and honest. There is no way you can make that track look good with as many seats as there are.
No.
With any series other than NASCAR running on the oval.
Well, and, you know, the other thing is that I think, well, what's the other really big, big race at Daytona?
Well, it'd be the 24.
And how many people come to that?
24.
Exactly. You know, that's it exactly. You look at that race, and it's a brilliant race. I love watching the Daytona 24.
Well,
I hate Grand Am. It's a
It is what it is. It's an endurance race. It is not a spectator-friendly race. The people that are there on campers are there to party, or they're just extreme enthusiasts of endurance-style racing, or they're affiliated with the teams in some way.
Right. And, you know, it's a great the event has great tradition, great history, and it really is a who's who in terms of participants in American motorsports.
I think the IndyCar series would do better as far as attendance, but I don't think it'd be much better. And I don't think it would be beneficial to the series to go to a track that they will look bad at.
No, and I think that's part of why
ISC
would be kind of happy to have them 1 year.
Yeah, you know.
To show that, you know, look, here, these people come and they have, what, 20,000, 30,000 people show up in our 200,000 or 190,000 person facility. You know, it looks barren.
Yeah.
So I think it's – I don't think it's a good place for the IndyCar series to go. And there are better options out there, and I think that well, this is something else Terry Inkstead had mentioned in the pre-race party, is that we could very easily see some additional SMI tracks next year, like Loudon.
Loudon, Las Vegas.
Yes, those were, that was another one that came up during the conversation.
Well, Vegas is intriguing because it'd be a great place to end your season. They've already moved they've already moved the championship banquet to Vegas. It would make sense to basically have the final race of the season kick off championship week in Vegas with all kinds of IndyCar-related things going on, kind of.
Oh, can you imagine the two-seater running up and down the Las Vegas Strip?
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
It'd be so cool. What a marketing gold mine for iZod, you know?
And they could send a picture to Bernie and say, look at me!
But, yeah, you dump Homestead, you pick up Las Vegas, you dump Kansas.
You know,
sucks being next to Kansas, but, I mean, call it like it is. You dump Kansas, you pick up Loudon. Someplace that actually wants a series and can put butts in the seat.
You know, and beyond that, the diversity of the schedule, to me, is very important. And right now, you've got one short oval, you've got Indy, and then you got a bunch of mile-and-a-halves.
Yeah.
And granted, Motegi is a very different mile-and-a-half, but the rest of them, well, the angle of banking is different.
they're all cut from the same form, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty much. So you've got the D-shaped, you know, you got Kansas and you got Kentucky and Homestead, and then of course the Chicago, all pretty much the exact same track. Now, obviously, Homestead used to be a good track. It was basically made to be a 1 mile, a mile and a half Indy. Was the because it was a squared off oval,
right?
And then it became more of a rounded oval, and then it became a D shaped monstrosity, which was cloned because it produces good racing in NASCAR,
right?
So anyway,
I know a lot of people want to go back to Milwaukee. The drivers do, the teams do, the league does, but historically, what a fantastic place to be, and the race before or the attendance was pretty good the last couple of times.
Yeah,
but you know, there's just so much baggage that comes with a promoter picking up that event anymore.
Yeah, you know, they've talked about a potential IndyCar series promotion of the event.
Yes,
and I'm not comfortable with that because I don't think that it's in their best interest to try and promote a race at that track, because it basically has failed, not because the track didn't sell out or, you know, didn't have good attendance and everything like that, but the promoters over the course of several years have proven that you cannot promote a race there in such a way that is beneficial to the promoter.
Right.
Because of the State Fair Board being the intermediary and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I'm hesitant for a couple of reasons. One, if you go back to Milwaukee, which I really do want, because I think having another flat track on there, a flat short track, is a good thing for the series.
Yes.
It kind of takes away that potential of going back to Road America. And I'd really like to see him go to Road America again. But that said, again, it's the Road America has its own baggage. Right. And can we overcome that baggage going back to Road America? I would much rather see Loudon on the schedule than Milwaukee.
And I think it has a better than even shot of happening for 2011.
Yeah, let's just hope the negotiations for 2010 didn't sour potential negotiations for 2011, and that Randy doesn't have to do a whole bunch of butt kissing to get it.
Well, I mean, sure, he's going to have to.
Yeah.
But you know, I think Randy is a savvy enough promoter himself and businessman and salesman. He can certainly say, look, you know, I'm the new sheriff in town. You know, what happened before is gone and in the past. Let's start from a clean slate. Let's see how we can make this happen. I have full faith in Randy Bernard being able to make this deal happen. But there was something very concerning that Engstad said. Has me very, very nervous. They're looking at having a street race in New York City. Hadn't Bernie been trying that for a long time?
Yeah.
Hadn't he failed?
Yeah.
But Izod is in New York. Izod's demographic is in New York. Izod would really like to have a race in New York, but really?
You know, I think the Baltimore deal is going to come on next season, and it will probably replace Edmonton.
Well, yeah.
That would be my guess.
Edmonton thing is starting to, from a promotional standpoint, starting to sound like a bit of a nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, they lost their title sponsor, and then also the airport is either closing or just closing the runway. There's been talk of making a permanent road course out of that facility, but that just doesn't sound like it's really even a potential, though it has been kicked around a little bit. There's just a whole bunch going on up there, and not that I want to see that race removed from the city of Edmonton. It really needs a change of venue because the airport track just doesn't do it.
Not for the IndyCars. I can really see that becoming a permanent racing facility for club racing and some things like that, great driving schools. I can see that being a very nice facility. It would make for a really nice – well, no, it wouldn't. Never mind. I was thinking of the airport section. Make for a very nice motorcycle track. Until I thought about the twisty part that's right up next to the wall, it's like, no, bad motorcycle track. It'd make a nice little club racing facility. You can put some go-karts in there, too, but no, not for IndyCar. There's one spot to pass, well, maybe two on that track, but at any rate, we're digressing. Let's head back to Kansas. All this,
sounds
of course,
good.
Started with the pre-race party, talking about Terry Engstad and all the bombshells he dropped on us downforce members. But at any rate, so back to it. Race day is overcast, cool, but dry. That was the important part for all three of us fans that were actually there. I'm beginning to wonder if the media didn't outnumber the fans at that event.
It may have.
But at any rate, so they come around. Green flag comes down, and away goes the racing. I started out the race shooting on a riser there in turn one, and I was there for about the first 50 laps, and I tell you what, that was some exciting stuff. I know those of you watching on TV didn't get this, and I'm sorry. ABC's fail. They completely dropped the ball on this. But at any rate, there are many, many laps where there are so many battles going on all through the grid that I couldn't get my camera from one to the next one in time.
Yeah.
I had to kind of skip every other one and come back to them the next lap. there is lots of side-by-side racing, and there is some good racing up front between Briscoe and Dixon before Briscoe's wheel fell off that you never heard about on the television broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, it was exciting stuff to watch. It's like, wow, yes. You know, the close wheel-to-wheel action is back. But then as you know, they started, as the cars started catching up to Bertrand Baguette and Milk Aduno, Bertrand was, his line was a little erratic. It wasn't, mm-hmm. it wasn't super tight like it really should have been. And so there are a few people having some problems getting around him. Alex Lloyd was a real hang up. That kid just needs to learn to respect, you know, his fellow racers and recognize that he is not in a fast car and just move aside. Milka, you know, she just, it seems incapable of holding a line. She'd come in very low on the turn. Understeer, her car would push up, and you know, someone trying to pass her would get pushed up onto the third line, which there isn't one there at Kansas.
So, third line is marbles.
Yes, exactly. Here be dragons, you know.
Yes.
And so I remember specifically seeing Dan Weldon repeatedly for several laps trying to get past Milk Aduno and
wow.
failing because you just keep riding up on him and just sliding all over the place, not holding a consistent line. You know, if you're doing that, let off the throttle.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to ride up into the guy that's next to you, give it up. Let off the throttle. You're in no danger. You're in no risk of actually getting a top 10 finish. Let's be honest. You are there to, you're basically there to fund, Alex Lloyd's, pride.
We know why you exist.
Yes. And Alex Lloyd, I know he has the talent. He has the racecraft, to hold his line. He seems to lack the respect to see that as a priority.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I was initially, I was a bit of a fan of Alex Lloyd. So I'm old enough to wear pink and, you know, use the moniker Pink Lloyd. That was brilliant, fantastic stuff. You mm-hmm. know, go guy. But the more I see of him, the less I'm liking. And unless his attitude changes, I'd be happy to come back around. But for the meantime, no. But at any rate, so lots of action all through the grid. There's the first few laps.
Yeah, and you know, if you're not familiar or don't do much as far as attending races, especially on tracks, you know, the majority of people who are IndyCar fans are people who are fans of the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah.
And then they may go to some other events, they may not. Now, if you haven't gone to see one of these mile-and-a-half tracks that you can see all the way around, it's pretty exciting stuff because you get to watch these battles unfold all the way around the track. You mm-hmm. get to watch these battles lap after lap, and you can keep your eyes on them. You don't lose them behind you know, the golf course and the turn three stand and this, that, and the other.
Here we go. Yo.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. If you're on the front stretch at Indy, you have terrible seats.
Yep. Stan J, baby, that's the place to be. Stan J.
Stan J's nice. I love Turn 3. But anyway.
Turn 3 is nice, too.
Anyway, and because of that, and also as a result of that, you know, we got the first four races of the season where any battle that was going on track, we saw on television because they had good production and people were paying attention and watching and the cameras were going where they should. Now, then you go to the ovals and it's very difficult to be able to follow everything that's happening on an oval. But that said, when there's a battle on track, you need the camera there instead of following the leader, which
exactly.
seems to be a problem with ABC because they either follow the leader or Danica.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you know, aside from the commentary, the camera work at St. Pete, I thought was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Kansas, no, it was bad. I came home from the track expecting to see, oh, what a great race! You know, we finally saw some, you know, close in action all through the race.
Yeah.
And no, everybody's like, oh my god, I slept through the whole thing. Do y'all see the same race that I did? And then I watched it on Sunday. It's like, oh, no, you didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, what fun. Oh, well, you know, this is an issue because a couple of things. You get these four races that led into the first oval. I'm excited about the first oval. I'm sitting here on live timing and scoring on Friday at work watching the first oval practice.
Uh-huh.
And I was enjoying it. You know, it just made me, you know, it's kind of like the first day of baseball season. You know, even if you don't like baseball, the first day of baseball season is a special day.
Yes. And yeah, as a Royals fan, you're filled with optimism and hope for about five innings.
Yeah, well, you know. But that said, you know, you go through it and you're excited about it, and then you get to race day, and they turn on the cameras, and it looks like a practice crowd at Indy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just looked awful. It's race day, and there's hardly anybody there. And then you go through the broadcast, and I honestly couldn't stay awake for it.
Well, I must admit, I was multitasking. I was reducing photos, so well, I had something else to occupy my time.
All of that said, you know, Versus is making some pretty decent strides in their ratings. Now, granted, they're not ones, but, you know, that's potential.
They're headed in the right direction.
Yes, but that's potential with ABC or ones, and I would be desperately surprised if ABC was able to pull a one for this race. I'd be surprised if they pulled a .75.
Yeah.
Because of how bad it looked on television, how bad it came across on the broadcast.
Well, and it seemed to me every five laps it was a commercial.
Mm.
Or an aside to promote their coverage of the Indy 500.
Mm.
It's like, ooh, and now we get to watch five laps of racing. Oh, and now we're back to commercials.
Yes, yes.
Really?
Lovely. Well, let's keep on with the racing, because it was far more exciting than us bantering about ABC.
the first big moment, of course, happened, a third of the way through the race, lap 80-ish,
mm-hmm.
Something like that. EJ Vizo was the first to succumb to the marbles. He was having a very good race, battling with Mario Moraes, who was also having a very good race. It was looking to be a very nice day for KV Racing Technologies. And he got up a little high in turn four, wiggle, 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 just kind of walked the car right up the track into the turn four wall.
Mm.
And, of course, out comes caution. In comes everybody to pit. And, you know, the real excitement happened on pit exit. I don't know who the person was there are three cars. I don't know who it was on the inside, but there was Takuma Sato in the middle and Milka Duno on the outside. It was Dan Weldon.
Yes, Weldon. That's right. And you already know we're talking about something bad happening.
Yeah, and poor Taku was the meat in the sandwich, so to speak.
Taku now, was the taco.
Yeah, and not in a good way. But so Milka was on the outside, which should have been further outside.
Let me rephrase your comment there. She was on the outside and squeezing down.
Yes, she was on the outside, but on the inside lane.
She was defending her line.
Yes, on pit out. She had
that racing was more to her speed.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't help it.
But she had two car widths to drive her right that she could have moved over easily all three could have come across timing. They would have slotted in their respective positions. No harm, no foul. No, she seems fit to just come straight on over. You know, of course, Weldon is on Takuma Sato's left. He has no place to go. And she comes right in, her rear wheel to his front wheel.
Mm-hmm.
They go careening through the grass.
Mm-hmm.
Haku makes it out. So does Milka. She runs around for a little while later, comes back and parks it. They yeah. make some show of pulling off the engine cowling and looking at the rear of the car.
Yes,
oh,
right.
Like,
but they
no,
need to
I'm
do
sorry. That was
is pull
you
off
girl.
The helmet and take a look between the ears.
Listen to the wind blow.
Yes.
Well, well, you know that. Okay, we're being a little unfair. She is a very intelligent woman.
Oh, absolutely.
You don't get four separate master's degrees in naval engineering or naval architecture and mechanical engineering.
Well, sir,
but nothing between the ears. But her racecraft sucks.
Yes,
she certainly doesn't have a master's degree.
She should apply her degrees differently.
Mm.
That yes. said,
but at any rate, so I think it was lap 92. She finally parks. Taku gets sent back way back in the grid, back to 19th. And, wow, has this guy figured out ovals? This, you know, of course, Takuma Sato, very seasoned race car driver.
Yes.
Formula One driver for Honda and then for Super Best Friends, Super Aguri Racing. And you know, of course, it isn't his first time on an oval being a Honda driver. They have their company picnic there at Motegi, and I think they have a Formula Nippon, an Indy car, and back in the day, a Formula One car do a demonstration drive around the Motegi Oval.
Hmm.
But this is his first time driving an oval competitively, and wow, this guy's figured it out. You know, I know that y'all were a little concerned about how he was going to do. I don't think we need to have concerns anymore. He is good on these ovals. And he went from 19th back up to the top five. Drove right up through the grid and was on Hideki's gearbox in quick fashion. It
nice.
It was a remarkable drive. Very, very impressive. Oh, but you didn't see that on the TV.
Hmm.
Never mind.
Ow.
sorry. I need to stop doing that. But at any rate, so, you know, Taku drives back, and fantastic, but Milka is out. And quite honestly, good riddance.
Hmm.
You know,
yes.
I saw the flag person waving the blue flag. I don't think anybody understands what that's for.
There are some who wonder, and I think one of the people, especially in the closing stages of the race, is wondering what the blue flag was for. Well, Toni Kanaan was wondering why they kept waving the blue flag at his teammate, and she wouldn't get out of the way.
No, he was juking and jiving all kinds of ways, trying to fill her mirrors. And I'm sure he was, I wish I'd had a radio. This would have been good listening right here.
Yeah.
But having TK, he's known to have a bit of a temper.
Yes, yes. He was actually working on bruising a toe in the cockpit.
Yeah, bruising his other toe. But at any rate, I'm sure some words were said to, his race strategist, in hopes that they would be conveyed over to Danica,
yes.
Great strategist. But yeah, that was pretty bad. But I think I might have mentioned this on a previous podcast, but the best description of the blue flag that I've ever heard is it tells the driver that there's a great race going on and you're not in it.
Sweet.
But, you know, obviously the blue flag just is not working. These drivers haven't figured out what that's about. Well, so they need to figure out what the black flag is for.
Yes, indeed. Now, see, that's the thing. It's race control that's the problem. And we had the last race at Long Beach. Larry Curry was just he was volcanic. Yep. I mean, the ash cloud over Europe may have come from him. Talking about
his vitriol set off that volcano.
Yes, I mean seriously, he was just blowing up at race control because not because his driver got the raw end of the deal, but because they were held up for several laps before they could get by.
Yeah.
Yep. So. Anyway, the blue flag deployed once, okay, deployed twice, okay, third time it's black.
Right, and if that doesn't work, it's the black with the white stripes.
Yeah, it just needs to happen. It needs to start happening. If they're showing the blue flag repeatedly to the same driver, Danica, half of the back markers in the field.
I was supposed to say the back quarter of the field.
Yeah. It just has to start happening because it cannot impede the race.
Right.
And that's where, this blogger frenzy, as you would term it, that's where it's coming from. Because people are starting to say, oh, they need to do a double-file restart like they do in NASCAR and put the lapped cars on the inside and the non-lapped cars on the outside or something else. They don't need to do that.
No, there's proper regulation already in place. There are rules already in place for this.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of enforcement. You have a blue flag, use it. That doesn't work. You have a black flag, use it.
Well,
be firm with the rules. Let drivers know that if you are disrespectful enough to try to impede the leaders when you have no possible investment in the race. You have you are not battling for position. You have no hopes in the last five laps of getting your lap back and improving your position. Get out of the way. Be respectful to those who are going for race wins and podium finishes.
Yeah. See, now, I'm kind of expecting a little bit more from the IndyCar Series on this kind of thing, especially the race before the 500. Now, you go back to Barber. Barber had a unique situation where Scott Dixon jumped the start. I mean, jumped it.
Yeah.
So much so that he's able to make up two positions very easily.
Yeah.
He was well beyond Marco Andretti's row before he crossed – when he crossed the start finish line,
right.
And the problem with that was Marco Andretti was in the row ahead of him at the start of the race. Okay, the IndyCar Series gave him not necessarily a penalty, but moved him back in the order to where he started the race from. That's the kind of correction that surprised me that they would do, but
what? Because it was right and proper.
It was right and proper, but some people would argue, the lanes and all this kind of garbage. Well, there is some precedence for some people thinking that, if the other lane isn't accelerating as fast as your lane on the start, then, all's fair. But the IndyCar Series chose to take a much harder stance with it, and probably because Scott Dixon is well known for gaining lots of positions on the start of the race. So there's precedence there that caused them. The interesting thing about this is there's precedence that needed to be set before you went to Indy.
Yeah.
Especially if they were talking about driver meetings and such. So I'm a little concerned that Indy's going to be, how do I put it?
A block party?
Well, a block party with lots of similar to results as to what we've seen for the last few years of no green flag pit stops. Because who needs a green flag pit stop when you have a wreck every 15 laps?
How is it that Bill – puts it from Press Dog. Festival of Carbon Fiber.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. You know, maybe this year we'll have a chance to not have that, because I think the quality of driver and the depth of the field has gotten a lot better over the last year.
Oh, indeed.
But that said, if you're inconsistent with your rulings, it's going to create bad issues, and I'm concerned about what this sets up. And then the blogger frenzy of everybody saying, we should do double wild restarts and garbage like that. You know, this is not the answer. It is not the answer. The more you try to become NASCAR, the less of your identity that remains.
Yeah, you've hit it right on the head. And, you know, the thing is, the drivers agree with you. They are not... they're not thinking that it, they're not thinking that it's about, the double file restarts. And they're not even talking about moving the back markers, you know, behind the race leaders or anything like that. What they're talking about is, well, what we had just discussed. Is that you have regulations in place, use them. Do not allow these back markers to run side by side on a two lane track, a two groove track, where they effectively impede and block the progression of the race leaders.
Yeah,
you can't allow that. It's like I said, it's a race control issue. It's not well, we need double wide or double file restarts or any hokey business like that. Leave that for the Tin Tops and their little manufactured entertainment.
Well, leave that for the Tin Tops and the restructured F1 rules with Koopa shells and shortcuts and
yes,
turbo yes. Speed boosts and things like that.
But at any rate, it's something where you need to have firm leadership from race control. Say, look, this will not be tolerated. You will be respectful of your fellow competitors. If you are not in the race, if you're several laps down, yield to those who are in the race.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, we'll give you a drive-through. If you fail to obey that, you will not be scored.
Hmm. Fair enough. Well, let's talk.
Here's where it hits home to the teams. If you are not scored, you are not at that event. You pull up enough of those, you do not get team money.
Hmm.
I don't know if they would go that far, but I tell you what, that would certainly put some pressure.
Basically.
On some of these teams.
If you come out and you participate in practice and don't participate in the race, you still get 12 points.
Yes.
Marty Roth proved that.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is that, you make that part of the penalty.
Yeah. Don't score. You don't even get any of the token points for showing up.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. If they would just enforce it, it would cure the problem, but they're not enforcing it.
Yeah.
So, and you have to understand the enforcement is going to be different on an oval as it is to a street course, because on a street course, it's difficult to make those positions. So they need to be more grudging in flipping out the flag.
Yeah.
But on an oval, lap after lap after lap, jeez, it's hard to make that argument. So, anyway, moving on from that discussion, the final results of the race were rather interesting, wouldn't you say?
They were. As we said, Dario and Briscoe looked like they were going to be set for a really nice battle to the finish till the wheel fell off and Briscoe fell back. In fact, I think he went a lap down at one point, got it back.
Yep.
And he ended up finishing sixth. Great race.
Yeah, good for very good for him.
Yeah, well, all things considered.
Yeah.
Tony Kanaan had a fantastic race. You know, as we said, he started out 15th, and he came up through the field, and well, Ryan Hunter Ray also had a nice finish to his race. He started in 22nd, and came up to finish in 5th position.
You know, and really that goes to show that Tony and Ryan, even though Ryan started 22nd, Tony and Ryan were working on race setups, and you can see that them working together, it worked out well.
It did. It did. And, you know, Tony was he was a different Tony after the race than he was after qualifying.
Well,
he was all happy and effervescent.
You know, you can't help but be encouraged for Andretti right now because they've had good results on ovals. They've had good results on road courses. They're proving that they're moving in the right direction. Now, they're not on par with the Targets and the Penske's yet, but they're moving in the right direction. And right now,
they're ahead of everybody else.
Yeah. They're splitting up and taking points away from the top teams.
Yes.
They're mixing in with the top results right now, and that's impressive. Basically, given what they were last year, which was not nearly as impressive.
But any rate, so yeah, Andretti Autosport had a great day with Tony and Ryan. I'll also say that John Andretti had a great race. Yeah, this is the first non-Indy race for John since, what, the early 90s, I think?
Yeah, certainly.
I mean, it's been a long time since he's been in Indy.
Since the days of CART, he has not ran on a open-wheel oval other than Indy. Wow.
Yeah, but anyway, so he comes from 17th to finish 9th. Had a fantastic run through the race. Again, one of those things where, you know, every lap, oh, look, there's John Andretti passing somebody else that you never saw on TV.
Yep.
But at any rate, so fantastic drive to John. That's got to be a real confidence boost for the team going into Indy. And, you know, let's be clear, there's no engineering data one can take from a track like Kansas to Indy. They're different beats.
It's just a level of comfort with the car.
And confidence.
Yes.
And confidence and cohesion in the team. So, yeah, fantastic stuff for them. And even Marco, who finished back in 13th position, you know, keep in mind, he started out in 26th.
Yeah.
So it was a good race for him. As far as the rookies, Romancini, Simona, and Bertrand Baguette finished kind of about where we expected they would finish.
Bertrand was 20th, Simona was 21st, Mario was 22nd, then Takuma was 24th, but that was contact.
That was a really unfortunate event.
Yeah, he definitely was going to show up the rookie class and rookie of the year easily.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Takuma and Hideki almost seemed glued at the hip all race long. Every time I'd see one go by, you know, the other wasn't far away, if not, you know, nose to gearbox.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, Jay Howard hit the wall, in turn four, exiting turn four, really unfortunate. I hope he has insurance. You know, I'd hate to see that bill, fully laid on Sarah Fisher.
Yeah.
And you know her company, and you know usually a driver it's part of a driver's contract that they're responsible for crash damage, mm-hmm. and will have some nature of insurance towards that, or there's some agreement to split or something.
Yeah.
But at any rate, that just had to be sick. Sarah coming around and seeing that. Dang it!
Yeah, about the only way that can get worse is, you know, if the young hotshot that you've hired crashes you out of the race, that's been known to happen. in Red Bull colors.
But at any rate.
Then beyond that, it can even get worse when you're actually a commentator on the broadcast and all of your cars crash.
Yeah, poor Robbie.
Still better this year.
He's doing much better this year.
he's sitting there this year watching KV just going, you know, with that knowing smile.
Come on. So at any rate, last restart of the race, there's like a handful of laps, about a dozen laps or so left. And Takuma gets one whale of a restart. I mean, he times it perfect and gets one monster jump on the rest of the field. Coming up, complete bonsai, just, you know, his style, go. And unfortunately, Hideki Muto, who was right in front of him, was trying to get around a lap car that, well, surprise, surprise, moved up track on him. And, you know, that caused Hideki to move up the track and right into Takuma. There was some rather heated words between the two afterwards, until they hashed out exactly what had happened. Basically, you can split the blame between two people. You can split, and I don't remember which car this was that rode up track towards Hideki. But put the blame on that driver, and you can put equal blame on Hideki's spotter.
Mm.
You know, you could say, well, you should be checking your mirrors. Well, you know, I'm sorry, when you're under full acceleration at, you know, near 200 miles an hour, those mirrors are probably vibrating a little bit, and you've got a lot going on. Yes, I know you're a professional race car driver. You should be cognizant of your surroundings. You have spotters for a reason, and you rely on their input. And when they say that you're clear high, you assume that you're clear high. You know, if you're having to rely on your mirrors, double check what your spotter's telling you, then there's really no need to have a spotter. So I'd say Hideki's spotter is equally culpable on that particular event or on that particular incident. Yeah. At any rate, it resulted both of them wadded up against the...
It resulted in both of them being wadded up against the fence.
Yep.
And along with that, I think symbolically your heart was wadded up against the fence as well.
Oh, it was. I'm like, both of my guys at once. Oh, seriously?
It's almost as bad as teammates crashing each other out.
It was. I'm like, oh, man. But, you know, it was funny because Hideki got to throw out the first pitch at the Royals game on Wednesday before the race. Yeah. She's seen the press photos from KV Racing Technologies or the photos they have there on their Facebook page. Looked like he had pretty good form to me. Should have left him in. I mean, Royals pitching couldn't get any worse.
Nice. You know, maybe he plays some Japanese ball in the off season.
Well, actually, I made a comment that I should have just left him in on Twitter, and whoever does the Twitter for KV messaged back that you know, he did attend a workshop from who was it, Matsura.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so, you know, there's some baseball interest there. It's like, oh, man, we could really use him in our bullpen.
Sweet. What fun.
So that was the last yellow of the race. The race gets back under green, and of course Scotty D is in the lead with several lap cars between him and Dario and Kanaan and Elio. Elio runs bad into traffic. Both Dario and Tony get by him. Elio drops back to fourth. And Scott, Dario, and Tony finish in that order for second and third for the race.
Scott Dixon winning the race cannot come as a shocker to anyone.
No.
This guy, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I picked him to win this race because he is automatic on the mile and a half. And Ganassi has these ovals figured out. Now, they're definitely coming into this race. There's always the potential that things have changed over the offseason, that teams have gotten the setups wrong, or other teams have gotten it just drastically right, and they're moving in the right direction. I just didn't foresee that happening, and it really looks like the status quo is the status quo on the ovals. Except that I think Andretti Autosport has made a step forward.
Well, you know, Canaan certainly is no slouch on these ovals, especially at Kansas. He has, there's been, 10 races here at Kansas now, first one in 2001. Tony's been in the top five 7 times.
Pretty sweet.
So, you know, it was no surprise to see him up on the podium.
And I think Dixon's won 7 times.
You know, for
it
the
just
past,
seems that way.
Chip Ganassi Racing, Target Chip Ganassi Racing, has won every spring race at Kansas. Every single one. It was Scott last year and this year. The 2 years before that, it was Dan Weldon. It very nearly could have been Scott in 2008. Very easily could have been. Had the yellows fallen a different way.
Yeah.
If you remember that race, he got caught out by an ill-timed caution, which allowed his teammate then, Dan Weldon, to assume the race lead and go on to the race victory. I think Scott had ended up finishing in P2 that day.
Mm. Well, but you know, going back again to Andretti Autosport, you have to wonder what potential harm will be done to the team if Ryan Hunter-Reay is not able to compete after Texas?
I don't know that he's in for Texas, is he?
Yeah, that's what everybody seems to be saying. He's in through Texas.
Okay.
That's coming from Trackside Online, and I think Cavan's repeated it. So, you know,
I will trust the boys at Trackside Online.
Yeah. Now, nobody has seen an official press release saying anything other than a limited schedule, including Indy. So, at this point, press release wise, we're guaranteed he's at Indy, and that's it. But no press release has really come out saying which races he would be at. That said, we've got this Adam Carroll coming on board over there, and people are making some comments about him basically starting up where Ryan Hunter-Reay leaves off.
That's kind of what I read into it.
Yeah, there could be a few things going on there. Obviously, Adam Carroll is a very talented individual.
Absolutely.
And coming from A1GP and basically going gangbusters in that defunct series, you know, he has some potential. He certainly showed up Marco in the few attempts he made at A1GP.
Yep.
And he's going to come onto that team and be another person who they don't have to babysit. And
yep.
Tony Kanaan will be very happy about that because he's tired of babysitting Danica and Marco.
Yep. Best of all, he's Irish.
Ah!
That makes him doubly good.
Then you can go down to the Colada and have a good Guinness with him.
Oh, I'd love it. That'd be fantastic. It's been a long time since we've had a good Irishman in the series, so that'll be nice. That'll be nice.
Well, other than that, you know, looking through the rest of the results, you know, Justin Wilson finishing 18th. No surprise. You kind of expected him not to do fantastic, but I'm looking forward to the potential good that you get from Thomas Schechter joining the team for Indy, and who knows, maybe more. There's a lot of good that can be done with that. 18th is respectable when you have 27 cars starting and he is not an oval expert and he's on a team that hasn't shown a lot of potential over the last few years.
Yeah.
But right now, you know, just moving forward, the potential of developing this program further because they've got it on the road and street courses. If they can get the oval program just halfway up there, they'll easily be a top five team.
Well, they've got the right engineer for it, don't they?
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
So, you know, everything's in place except the driver experience.
Yeah.
I think that's the one thing that the team really lacks in terms of developing their oval program is the ability for the driver to really understand what needs to change with the vehicle dynamics.
Yeah.
And, you know, please, don't send me hate mail. I have total confidence in both Justin and Conway. They are fantastic drivers, very skilled, very knowledgeable, great racecraft. But I mean, let's face it, their oval experience is minimal.
Yeah.
You know, as they run more ovals, they will pick up this experience and understand, you know, how to convey to the engineers what it is the car is doing, what it is they need it to do.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't think they have the database, the personal database, to be able to do that yet.
Well, certainly they've been on teams that don't have success on ovals.
Yeah.
Or very limited success for that matter. So, let's see. You know, other than that, you know, the results are not extremely surprising top to bottom. Alex Tagliani finishing in eighth is very surprising, though. I mean, qualifying well is one thing. Actually turning it into a good result in the race is another. Finishing eighth on the team's first oval, you just gotta
they've
say
they've been impressive all season, haven't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. I mean, a brand new team, which is right now sitting with good points and 12th in the series championship. Yeah, he's about 94 points back with 96 points total from the series championship. But that said, look who he's in front of. He's in front of Marco Andretti. He's in front of Danica Patrick. He's in front of EJ Viso and Hideki Muto on, you know, pretty decent teams.
Yep.
So, yeah, wow.
You know, kudos to him. I don't know what's in their water there at Fast Racing, but I want some of it.
They
are doing things right, and you know, if this season is any judge, you know, I'd say give them a sophomore slump next season, and the year after 2012, they are going to be very strong, much like what KV is right now.
Hmm. Yeah. KV has some interesting hurdles to overcome this season, and
if they didn't have bad luck, they'd have no luck at all.
Well,
they brought
the bad luck on themselves. Granted,
I was going to say I should keep my own lectures on. On the non-existence of luck, but
yeah, well, you know, you take guys like EJ Viso, who came into the league, showed blinding pace, but also, Thomas Schechter like tendencies.
Blinding disregard to caution.
Yes, blinding disregard to caution. That's a nice way of putting it. Then team him up with a Mario Marias, who showed an equal lack of guard, and then Takuma Sato, who is well known for his maneuvers in F1. It makes you wonder how the team is going to survive this season with chassis still under the guys at the end of the year.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an expensive
Those would be great questions to ask Mr. Kalkoven.
Yeah.
Oh, so, fun.
Has the insurance company finally cut you guys off?
Yeah. Well,
and I hope not, because, doggone it, that's a team that had just a lot of promise. Mm-hmm. I mean, all three of those guys, as you say, are super quick. They have the real potential to do very well. Well, Marais finished, in seventh? Improving five positions. I think EJ could have finished just as highly. Taku and Hideki were fighting for fourth and fifth, or fifth and sixth at the time.
Yeah.
And so, doggone it, they're right up there. They just need that little bit of caution's not the right word. Discretion. You need that little bit of discretion. to get them to back off just a hair before they get in trouble,
yep,
instead of a hair after.
Yeah. Well, as far as the race results go, we've gone over them. Now the point standings, we've got Willpower still on top with 190. Scott Dixon is 26 back. He jumped up in the order like three spots into second, 26 points back. Elio is 28 points back. Ryan Hunter-Reay is 31. And Dario Franchitti is 38. Followed decent chunk back, 53 back, is Justin Wilson in sixth. So the points still are playing out kind of how we expect them. The very top of the rung is the Penske's and Ganassi's. But Ryan Hunter-Reay sitting 31 back really is encouraging to me.
Well, especially since there's going to be a lot of points available for qualifying at Indy.
Yes, indeed.
I'll hold off on that for a later podcast. So
yeah, certainly. Qualifying in Indy is worth something now. It's worth 15 points and an additional monetary bonus, which, you know, in the end isn't the most it's not the biggest incentive. The points are indeed the biggest incentive to me.
And well, again, you know, I'll make the comment that I made at the beginning of the season about the little extra kick that Izod was putting in. You know, you go from $100,000 to $175,000.
Mm-hmm.
$75,000, that's a full-time employee.
Indeed. Indeed. But that said, the 15 points is going to be instrumental this year.
Yes.
Especially the way, you know, it really looks right now like Will Power has the potential to become the series champion if he continues the form he has on the road courses and does well on the ovals.
Yeah.
Scott Dixon right now is on a tear and has all the potential of just blanking out these mile-and-a-half ovals this year.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, don't know how you bet against him on the
And then Ryan Briscoe, short of the problems that he had, would also be well up in the order, given the delta in points that he would have experienced from this weekend. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting year. It's going to be fun to see how this one pans out, and hopefully it doesn't come down to a pit wall in Japan.
Yeah, he's... We're going to see endless replays of that when we go to Motegi, yes. I'm sure. Much to Ryan's dismay.
Indeed.
As if he hadn't seen that enough in his own nightmares throughout the winter.
Indeed. Well, I think that pretty much wraps us up for the evening. We appreciate you listening tonight, and we will go ahead and come back to you on a regularly scheduled evening on Wednesday night. We'll go ahead and record, and you should see that on Thursday. So thanks again for listening to The Open Paddock, and Doug, have any last saved rounds?
Not tonight.
Okay. Well, pleasure speaking with you this evening, and... Yep. Thanks for attending the race this weekend and being the on-site Open Paddock correspondent.
It was arduous and difficult work, but I'll give it up for the company.
Yeah, indeed. I'll be excited. moving forward, the next time I'm going to see you will be at Indy, so I'm looking forward to that. So,
yep.
Doug, have a good evening.
Good evening, sir. See you all out in Indianapolis.
Good night.